Have a lot of those cases involved children or youth?
That's an excellent question. So about 30% of our total cases have involved people under the age of 18. So it's a significant portion of them. And almost 70% of the cases are people under the age of 40. So our population tends to skew young anyway, so that it would make sense that we would have mostly young people. So our two deaths in this region were people between the ages of 50 and 59.
Oh, I see. And what is the capacity of YKHC and our healthcare system in general in our region to handle a large number of COVID cases?
That's a really good question, and it's one that keeps me up at night. So we have 24 beds in our hospital, and we don't have any ICU beds. So when we have an ICU level patient, that person has to be shipped to Anchorage by air medevac. So if we have too many patients, that would overwhelm our hospital system. We would also have to ship the patients who weren't ICU level. So in other words, if we had to admit more patients than we had either the staffing or the physical beds for, we would have to ship them to Anchorage. Now, we do have contingency plans that we came up with in conjunction with the state of Alaska for having opening other wards and managing other patients that might exceed our normal capacity. But those would definitely be only an emergency situation where the hospital beds in Anchorage were full and we couldn't ship anyone anywhere. We would institute these contingency plans, and then we would be able to open up additional beds. And we would have to rely on other staffing for them to come in to help us with the staffing. Because some of the trouble is we lack some of the staffing to keep some of these patients safe. So for example, one of the things you need for a patient who's on a ventilator, which is a breathing machine, you need a respiratory therapist to help monitor their breathing and adjust the machine. And we simply don't have enough of them to keep more than a couple of patients safe on a ventilator. So that's another reason why we would be shipping our ICU level patients to Anchorage. And it's interesting to note that this week, we had a patient with COVID in our emergency department that we had to keep for nearly 24 hours because all of the ICU beds, this was an ICU level patient, and all the ICU beds in Anchorage were full. So we've already reached, I think, the limit of our capacity of the healthcare of the state. So it makes some of these mitigation strategies even more important.
Wow, I see. Do we have a lot of people in our region who are considered, in general, high risk for COVID?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we know that the elderly are considered high risk, and we have lots of chronic lung disease in our region as well. And that's another risk factor for having serious complications from COVID. So I think hypertension is also a very high risk factor. So those of us with high blood pressure, that's another risk factor. And obesity, that's probably another risk factor. And we do have high rates of all of those problems here. It's important to note that we think Alaska Natives in general might also be a high risk for complications. Some of the evidence that has been collected by the state of Alaska shows that Alaska Natives get sick more often and are more likely to die when they get infected with COVID-19.
Wow. What is the best recommendation you have for quarantine? So if I've traveled out of the region and I come back, what is the best guidance currently for quarantining?
That's a really great question. It's one we get a lot. And I think quarantine can be really confusing because there's so many different entities that provide quarantine instructions, but we stick to kind of the CDC recommendation, which is 14 days. So that means that once you, 14 days from your last exposure, as it were, to any type of person who might be infectious. So in this case, if you're traveling back from Anchorage, day one would be the day you arrive in your home destination, whether it's Bethel or a village. And day 14 would be the 14th day after that. And I think the reason for that is because COVID-19 is a virus that takes a few days for you to start showing symptoms and to start having a positive test. So if you were infected before day one, so let's say you were infected at the day you traveled, you may not test positive when you came through the airport. And in fact, you may not even feel sick until between days 5 and 8. So most people are going to show symptoms between days 5 and 8, but we know that people can show symptoms up to day 14 on average. So that's why we recommend the 14 days of quarantine. It's important to note that if you test negative at the airport, that's usually done on the first day, and you may not have enough virus in your system to show, to make the test be positive. So we don't want people to be falsely reassured by a negative test. It's important to get that follow-up test. The state of Alaska recommends between 7 and 14 days after travel to be sure, and then wait for those full 14 days to quarantine. Now, some hospitals, like our hospital system, has a sort of a special quarantine exception, so that after 5 days, if you've traveled to an area that like Anchorage, you can return to work, but it's just like a modified quarantine. So you still have to quarantine in your home, but you're allowed to travel to and from work.
I see. Where would folks in Bethel and then in our village locations get a follow-up test? Would they just in Bethel go to the tent, or could they go out to the airport? And then in the villages, do they just need an appointment with the clinic?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So people are always welcome to go back out to the airport if they're able to go out there when the flight lands. And we also have the 543-6949 number. That's our hotline. You can call and schedule the test and just let them know it's your follow-up test from travel. And in the village clinics, or in the villages, call the clinics and they'll set you up a time for testing.
Great, okay. What kind of guidance can YKHC provide on our schools who are currently at high risk moving back to medium? In particular, those schools in communities where there has been identified sporadic community spread of COVID-19.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a moving target. And what we've generally recommended is about 2 weeks after the last case of community spread. We generally think at that point it might be safe to move back down to medium risk. So for Bethel, which is one of the village or one of the towns with community spread, our last community spread case was about 10 days ago. So we think it might be possible if we don't get any more cases through the rest of this week that we could consider having the conversation about going back down to medium risk. And so I think that's a pretty good standard. Now, in some of the places that have a lot of community spread, or if Bethel ever gets to a situation where we have lots of community spread instead of just sporadic spread, we might recommend 30 days, two infection cycles. So not only 14 days from the last case plus another 14 days just to be on the safe side. I believe that's what the Anchorage School District has chosen as their standard. But we've decided since our spread is sporadic that it might be okay after 14 days to go back to medium risk.
All right, great. I saw a notice come out about advertising for flu shots coming up this weekend on the 3rd. Could you talk a little bit about the recommendation and then how folks can access those?
Sure. So this year, every year I always recommend flu shots. But this year in particular, we think it's really important that 100% of our residents in the YK Delta get a flu shot. And the reason for this is because the flu outbreak on top of a global pandemic would overwhelm our healthcare system. So we think it's really important that everyone get a flu shot. If enough people get a flu shot, we can avoid a flu outbreak altogether this year. The other thing is the symptoms of flu are a little similar to COVID, you know, fever, body aches, cough, runny nose. They're very similar. And so it'll be hard to distinguish between flu and COVID this fall. So we think it's really important that everyone get the flu shot. So we're having a mass dispensing event this weekend, October 3rd. In Bethel, the place will be where the COVID testing tent is, in the parking lot of the CHSB building from 10 until 2. The villages, there are multiple participating villages, all of our sub-regional clinic villages, and many of our smaller villages as well will be participating in this. And the villages will be open, generally speaking, from noon until 2. Some of them will be open from noon until 3. And to find a list of those, you can go to the YKHC website, and there'll be a list of the villages that are having this flu shot exercise. If you're in a village that doesn't have one, or for whatever reason you can't make it on October 3rd, you're always welcome to call and get an appointment to get the flu shot. And we'll likely have other dispensing exercises in the future. In the past, we've gone to sporting events, we've gone to basketball games, we've gone to the cultural center when they have their Saturday markets, but those events won't be held this year for the most part. So we're trying to do as many drive-through events where we can keep people safely distanced and still give them the flu shot.
Great. In closing, I just have one last question. Do you have any advice about strategies or just advice for mitigating spread for folks in our region?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of the more, I think, important things that has come up, especially as we've been investigating some of the cases in our region, is we really need people to kind of keep their social circles small. So in other words, avoiding gatherings indoor, especially indoor gatherings, that's really important. And then after you travel, make sure you adhere to that quarantine that we've been recommending, even if your employer doesn't require it. Just really not seeing other people, not visiting during that 14-day window, so that you can definitely keep from spreading COVID if you happen to have picked it up while you're traveling. So keeping your social circles small, avoiding indoor gatherings. We also strongly recommend that people wear a mask and a tightly fitting mask over both your mouth and nose. Is really important for prevention of both you spreading the virus to other people, but also we think it protects you from if other people are coughing and sneezing near you. So when you're not able to physically distance from people, wearing a mask is a really important thing. And also in any public places, stores, restaurants, things like that, a nice tight-fitting mask works really well. And then washing your hands frequently. It's a simple, often overlooked public health measure, but if you can wash your hands, and we think about 20 or 30 seconds with soap and water real vigorously kills the virus. It's actually, for all the trouble it's caused, it's actually a pretty easy to kill virus. So washing your hands regularly, using an alcohol-based hand sanitizer, about 70% or more. If you get all of your surface of your hands wet for about 20 or 30 seconds. And if you don't have any of those things, you can use a bleach containing solution that will also kill the virus. So we think those things are really important for the risk mitigation for the prevention of the spread of COVID.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hodges, for your time. And thanks just to the whole YK team. You have been incredibly supportive of all of the school districts in the region. And I know here at LKSD, we really appreciate it.
Oh, you're most welcome. And thank you all for your hard work. I know this is a very interesting year for all of us. And we're all doing things that we never thought we would be doing. And you guys are doing an excellent job. And I appreciate your partnership to keep all of our students and teachers and staff safe.
Thanks.